Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are all clear to know the truth. Well, we're back after a short one-week break. And,
Break. It was a break. Right now. You know what?
What?
Jay, I'm sorry.
I shouldn't
be a snappy cat. That's not very nice of me. I apologize.
Well, I'm sorry. Can you define snappy cat?
That's that cat meme on the internet, you know, and he looks all
that one.
His eyebrows down. Yeah. Isn't that a snappy cat? I think.
I don't know.
Oh, something like that. Okay. So I'll try to be in a little better mood. So at least I'm here.
I'm the one that should be upset.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why, but I just feel like I'm the one that should be upset.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I thought you were going to say it wasn't a break last week because it really didn't seem like a break for the shows that were on at the time. But S.H.I.E.L.D. was back. Everything was right with the world, at least as far as us watching S.H.I.E.L.D. Of course, on S.H.I.E.L.D., holy moly, all sorts of stuff going on.
The world, the universe, you know, that the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents live in there, that world.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it's almost as screwed up as ours is now. I mean, it's getting close.
There is a lot of scary stuff going on there. And what's interesting is some stuff from the previous episode that we talked about where I thought I saw a cool little Easter egg that was pointing towards this episode.
No. Uh-huh.
No, it wasn't there. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But why don't you go ahead and tell us about the episode here, U-Prizing. Uprising.
Oh, okay. For a second there, we were doing like a moving company or something. But this was the third episode from season 4. And as you said, Uprising was what it was actually called, I think. That's how you pronounce that. October 11th, 2016. Was when that aired, and it was written by Craig Titley, directed by Magnus Martins.
I do not recognize that name, but that is awesome.
What a cool name. Magnus Martins. Kind of sounds like a brand of – well, anyway. All right. So let me tell you a little bit about
this. I'm sorry. What was the title of the episode again?
Uprising.
There we go.
Uprising.
Okay. Thank you.
Tell you about this episode here. Let's see.
Turn it on.
Yes, exactly. Well, hey, turn off the lights because the party's over. That's what it's looking like for the Inhumans. See when Miami goes bark when Miami barks. Yes, it was dangerous. That Wild Dog came in. No, that was a different show.
Was a different show. We'll get to that later.
Try that one again. Yeah. Hey, you know what? When Miami goes dark from an EMP, a supposed Inhuman takes responsibility, demanding that the Sokovia Accords be dissolved or more major cities will suffer dangerous blackouts.
Boo.
They don't want those Inhumans to be, you know, registered anymore. But, you know, it turns out it's not the Inhumans after all.
Nope.
Yeah, it's the Watchdogs hunting them down with some inside intel about where to find them. And they find Yo-Yo. But, you know, luckily Coulson, Mac, and Fitz, they get there in time to help her out and also find the EMPs. Meanwhile, May fights for her life with only hours to survive from her encounter with the ghost, right?
Yep.
Radcliffe and Simmons work frantically to try to save her, but looks like, you know, she's just going to have to die, I guess. Daisy roams around L.A. with Robbie Reyes during the blackouts, learning more about his past. But when they have to save his brother Gabe from some gang members that are causing chaos during the crisis, she makes her injuries worse. And then she has to rely on him even further. After the team fixes all the blackouts, Director Mace, I guess his friends, they don't call him Director Mace, do they?
Hefe.
the Com Jefe. He decides, you know, with a little advice from Coulson, that it's time to take the new shield public and reveal to the world that it was the watchdogs that are the terrorists. That might be kind of hard to convince everybody when they appear to be backed by some pretty powerful people.
Pretty powerful people?
That's perfect.
Excellent. Wow. Yeah, this was a great episode. Nice mix of really cool action, humor. I'm glad we've got the Fitz, Coulson, Mac trio back together. They really put out the hits. Ba-dum-bum. But before we get into talking about this, sorry, I'm a little giddy. Before we get into talking about this episode, we've got a little bit of news. Let me ask you this question. How would you feel if I told you that Haley Atwell was going to return as Agent Peggy Carter?
Yeah! I knew it. I knew it was going to happen. Awesome.
Now, it's not exactly how you expect, but I still think it's pretty cool. So it doesn't appear to be live action, but she is going to be showing up in a new cartoon called Avengers Secret Wars. Now, I was listening to, or when I was reading the initial story about this, I was like, what is this? Like one of those, they're doing like a movie like they do for the DC films or the DC cartoons. So originally, this is a show that's been on for a few years called Avengers Assemble. Then last season, on the third season, they changed it to Avengers Ultron Revolution. And at Comic-Con this summer, they revealed that the fourth season was going to be called Avengers Secret Wars. And it's going to have fan-favorite Marvel heroes like Black Panther and Ant-Man in it. And it sounds like she is teaming up with some of the Avengers to go against Kang, who is the master of time and space in the Marvel Universe. He's a villainous time traveler. And so that would make sense that some of them either go back to the 40s or maybe to the 50s or something like that, or they bring her forward in time. And since it's animated, they can, you know, do some really cool stuff. So we'll keep an ear out for that and let you know more about when we think Peggy might be showing up. I am not sure when the series airs, but I believe it's on Disney XD. At least Avengers Assemble used to be, and I haven't really been paying attention to that show for the last year and a half. So,
Well, that's almost as cool as a new series or, you know, new season, I guess. But
right,
but
and
I am still holding that hope someday.
I'd love to see a one-off movie, you know, or another guest appearance on S.H.I.E.L.D. as a flashback, maybe to the 50s or something like that. But again, it's very easy for actors like this to lend their voice because they show up for, you know, 4 hours and record a bunch of stuff and then they're done and animators have to take over the rest of the task. So, I mean, not that it's easy for the voice actors, you know, it's still work for them, but it's obviously a lot easier schedule than appearing on camera.
Right. Well, and probably a cheaper, well, almost definitely a cheaper series to produce for Disney. So,
I would think so,
But hey, you know, it's nice to know that they're keeping her on the shelf there. You know, they didn't just say, yeah, we had a Agent Carter series there for a couple of years, but we don't really use her anymore, you know.
Right.
So I like that that is one thing I think that the Marvel Universe overall does a really good job of, just understanding that they have just hundreds and hundreds of characters to choose from the comics, and they go and they use them pretty regularly, ones that your average, you know, media watcher wouldn't necessarily know, but comic book fans can be excited about.
Well, especially in the cartoons, between like the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon and this Avengers cartoon and the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon, they're digging deep. Really cool stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, DC does that a little bit on their TV shows, but we haven't seen much of it other than that. So,
and what Marvel is doing is, you know, as they get more shows out there, there's more opportunities for these characters to cross over, like with more Netflix shows coming. If there are more shows on ABC or live action shows, you know, because the movies don't necessarily seem to cross over with the TV and the TV doesn't cross over with the Netflix. And, you know, that may change at some point. But obviously we've got a lot of characters out there and it's nice to see different ones. And S.H.I.E.L.D. keeps bringing different types of characters in, and hopefully we'll see some other exciting characters based on comic books.
Yeah.
Now, if you are a collector of Lego, there is potentially a really, really awesome Lego set of the bus. Now, this is it was part of a Lego Ideas website where artists and designers can make proposals to the company. And someone put together the CXD-23 Airborne Mobile Command Station. So it's the bus plus 7 minifigures, Lola, and you know it's got command center area. It's got the lab area and a couple other little places. You know the fish
comes
tank
with Lola, huh? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, and. You know, it's the bus, and you can break it up into, you know, it's like a play set, but it's not something that's being made, but there is the consideration for it. So if you guys are interested in something like that, and of course being Lego and looking at the size of it with all the minifigures, I'd guess that would be like a $400 to $500 investment. Not really a toy.
Yeah, Lego, they are going to town with their variety these days. I just got a Lego catalog in the mail today, and they had all kinds of different franchises I didn't expect in there.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, I guess they're always branching out with stuff. So, and this final thing, I'm not really sure if this is could be considered a spoiler, but it's kind of out there already. And most people probably can figure this out just by watching what's happening on this week's show. But my friend Greg let me know that Chloe Bennett posted an image to her Instagram the other day where she's checking her email on her computer, but she's sitting on her chair in her S.H.I.E.L.D. outfit. So take that for what you will. That, you know, there's obviously multiple explanations for that, but...
maybe it's just really comfortable.
It does look really comfortable. I mean, like a second skin, sort of, so...
Yeah. I feel like really, really tight clothing.
Well, you know, they're at a later hour now, so...
True, true.
Yeah. All right. So let's get in talking about Uprising here, which when I first heard about this, I was like, Uprising, that sounds really familiar. I thought they had an episode. Did you recall like an episode being named that or something previously?
You know, it's hard to say anymore with some of the episode titles that are kind of, I don't want to say generic, but it is kind of generic action-y kind of episode title. So I thought, well, maybe one of the other shows we watched had that title. So I wasn't sure.
Well, I guess back the last 9 episodes of season 1 collectively were called Uprising, which was the episodes around Captain America Winter Soldier that related to the rise of Hydra and the kind of the decimation of S.H.I.E.L.D. Kind of like right now they're calling the episodes, when they advertise them at least, they're calling them, you know, next on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ghost Rider, you know. So yeah. There have been different arcs on the show that have gotten a promotional name that they've put in print on the ABC website and stuff like that. So Uprising was something that they were using back in beginning of, what would that be, 2013, I think. Was when the episodes were. So, and Mac gets the award for saying the title, not that difficult in this particular episode. Cause he said something about an uprising. I'm not going to tell anybody what the title for next week's episode is, but I'm really interested to see if a character actually says next week's title, because it's quite long and very specific. So
I'll be watching for that.
So the uprising of the title, it appears to be my initial thought is that it's about the Watchdogs, who have kind of gone from this national to an international group, but we don't know that it's the Watchdogs to begin with. We believe, just as the team does, well, maybe you don't, but that it's the Inhumans. And there's, like you said, there's this mysterious figure. He's in shadow. We never really find out who he is, and he's the voice of the uprising. And he says that, you know, they want the Sokovia Accords broken down, and, you know, whatever, like...
The registration has to end.
Yeah.
Registration of Inhumans, that's, yeah.
Which,
or more cities will suffer the blackouts.
So let me just branch off here and ask about that. So obviously it's not the Inhumans. So I believe the guy was just saying that stuff to make it sound like it was the Inhumans.
Yes.
But what would happen, what would the Watchdogs accomplish if people, if the countries gave in to those demands? Like, what would that accomplish for the Watchdogs?
Well, I don't think they believed that there was ever a possibility that they would give in to those demands. You know, the United States government is not known for giving in to people's demands or giving, you know, money to terrorists or blackmailers or hostage holders or things like that. So I don't think ever since D.B. Cooper got away with the money, I don't think anybody else has gotten money from the U.S. government for doing something like that.
Okay.
I don't think they ever believed they would. I think they were really just trying to cause chaos and mistrust.
Well, and setting that up and then having the senator say, you know, yeah, it's the Inhumans. And when S.H.I.E.L.D. comes out at the end and says, you know, hey, we're your friend here and we protected you. And it was this group of terrorists called the Watchdogs. And then she comes back on the news at the end and says, you know, I still have it on good sources that it was the Inhumans, which is, as you said earlier, there's a lot of similarities to things that are going on in the real world here. It's getting a little blurry. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Since this is kind of a good time to share a thought with you I had, and this would actually apply to a lot of things you and I talk about, including our other shows, but I have noticed lately a trend in superhero movies and TV shows where they're really pitting your average person against the ones that are different. And that's not by any means a new theme, especially in superhero things. You know, that X-Men have always kind of dealt with that, right? But I know even over on Arrow this week, there was an issue where the guy was very upset, you know, wanted to defend himself from metahumans and magic and things like that. And that's a theme in this with the Inhumans. And we see that in the movies with Man of Steel. The reason I bring it up is because it feels very reflective of our real world right now, where people use that prejudice against other groups to gain, power or groups of people or money or whatever it is they're trying to accomplish, and it's kind of scary. But what I was going to share with that is that I'm glad to see that when that is a theme, the good guys are the ones that are kind of still fighting against that, you know? Mm-hmm. So Coulson and Daisy both really stuck to their guns and still feel that that is a very unfair thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and people fear what they don't understand. And the this whole Inhuman thing is still pretty scary. Like you said, the character on the show, he's, you know, kind of freaking out about, you know, these people with powers and stuff like that, which, you know, it's understandable. Imagine if we lived in a world where, you know, characters could turn into, you know, whatever they touched, or they had earthquake powers, or, you know, lightning bolts came out of them or stuff like that. I mean,
The world today, I don't think we could handle it. I mean, we can't even handle people that look different than us, you know, or a different gender or different anything. But it does really make you think. I am glad that this is kind of a theme that threads through these types of things, because the other thing I thought about, and I guess I'll kind of wrap up with this, my personal thoughts, but I may have talked about this on one of our shows, but one of my lessons in life as I was growing up about what kind of a person to be, I learned a lot of moral lessons from reading Superman comic books. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, that for some reason, it really, really stuck with me, some of those moral lessons. So when I see these shows that are showing why this is not the way to go, I appreciate that, because I hope that it'll have that same kind of impact on kids that are watching it today.
That's really good, Josh. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. These are the kind of things I think about, you know, when I'm in the bathroom after I've watched the show. So,
purging yourself from the from the horrors of the show, as it were. So, the Watchdogs have behind the scenes information. They've got actual intel from the Sokovia Accords or whatever the registration database that the governments of the world are using. You know, there's obviously a large number of signatory nations that are behind this based on Captain America Civil War. So originally I was going to ask, who do you think's releasing the list of inhuman information? But then we saw the senator, Rhoda Nadir, was up to something. So I kind of have just made the assumption that she's involved in leaking this list out to the watchdog. She's on the phone with somebody getting an update. What do you think's going on with her other than just kind of playing both sides of the issue?
Yeah, I she probably will end up being the person that's leaking that to them. But then I got to thinking, in a real world situation, do senators and you know, congressmen, all these people, do they have access to things like that? Like if we had some kind of a registration,
if they were, you know, like on the Senate Armed Services Committee, you know, something like that, you would have access to more information than your normal senator. So if there was a senatorial committee for inhuman registration, which we don't know that there is or there isn't, I don't recall anything like that, she possibly could be sitting on that committee or be in charge of it. So yes, of course, there would be some.
Well, even so, I mean, she could have influence over somebody that does have that information as well. So,
right.
So I don't know if it's her specifically that's releasing that data to them. But I don't think it's been, you know, hacked or anything like that. That would have been another possibility. But it sounds like somebody's feeding them this stuff. And, of course, somebody's funding them, too.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they've gone from a national to kind of international group. They've got, you know, military-grade body armor. They've got this intel. They've got
technology.
These EMPs, which I understand the nature of an EMP, you know, as this electromagnetic pulse, which was kind of the first thing I thought about when, you know, we see the power go off and people's phones die. And those two things aren't necessarily connected. But then when the helicopter crashed, you know, when it like lost power and crashed into the building, I'm thinking this is really like an EMP because it would have disrupted circuits around.
Right.
But I got to say, I don't think it's, especially with a EMP that's going off every 2 seconds, I don't really think it's safe to be standing like anywhere near that thing. That's a lot of magnetic radiation being put off. And, you know, MRIs, you know, are good tools to use to find out information about what's inside our bodies, but you don't want to be exposed to that kind of radiation all day.
I appreciate that you were concerned about the minions keeping guard over that. That's very kind of you.
I mean, they were, you know, they probably were just not given benefits.
This shows why you're on the good side. This shows why you're a SHIELD director here. See, because you care about everyone, even the thugs.
I care about what's going on with Senator Nadir's brother.
Mm,
what
interesting
is up with that?
So one possibility is that in the transformation of being an inhuman, what do they call it? Transgenesis or something like that?
Terragenesis.
Terragenesis, right. Okay, I apologize. Okay, so Terragenesis, I didn't get that file out of our secret office. So sorry about that. So possibly as he was going through that, he died before he, you know, fully transformed. And he's still in his cocoon.
He's like dead in his cocoon.
Yeah.
Oh,
another possibility is that he has just not yet emerged from that.
So that was my initial thought because she's sorting the mail and she throws like the catalogs and the what looked like garbage stuff in the garbage. But then threw, you know, letters onto a pile on the floor, like, you know, those are for later. We're going to get those.
Yeah. Well, and she's clearly not right in her head, I guess, but, either way, whatever I think it's just based on the little that we know about her. It seems that she's very, very bitter, very angry, about the inhuman situation because of her brother. And she's looking to, you know, looking for vengeance, I guess, or looking for somebody to pay for it. And she's already made, 17 inhumans pay for it just from that one blackout attack. So
I guess, like I said, I feel like she's playing both sides, but I guess she might be more in the favor of we need to extinguish these Inhumans. If she's involved in this, we have so little to go on. There's a lot of good ideas. And of course, I think that we're going to see Daisy and Ghost Rider coming, you know, into this and helping out. There may also, actually, no, I'm sure there will be. What's the new doctor's name?
John. That was helping Simmons?
Yeah, the one that helped Simmons.
Oh, yeah. So that's Dr. Radcliffe. Holden Radcliffe. I couldn't think of his first name.
Yeah, Holden
Radcliffe.
So I'm sure that he and Ada are going to come into this as well. My guess is that this senator, because she's been so vocal on TV, there's going to be some public hearings or arguments between the director and the senator. And what happens when she finds out that the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., who she already is kind of, you know, putting bad words out there about them, when she finds out that he's an Inhuman, like, all heck's going to break loose there.
Yeah.
So, okay. So yeah, a lot of interesting stuff going on there. Can't really tell how, you know, I'm sure this is going to be the main storyline for the rest of the beginning of the season here, the first half of the season. So we'll keep an eye on that. The other big point of this episode was dealing with Agent May. And as you said, she dies in it. But she was only mostly dead.
Mostly dead, yes.
So Miracle Max gave her the pill. And,
yep.
You know, coated it with chocolate on the outside, and they got her back.
And made sure she didn't go swimming for at least...
48 hours, I think.
At least an hour, I think it was. Yeah,
so okay. I have to say, I was kind of on the edge of my seat with this whole bit, you know, because they're like, we've got to bring her back. We can only let her be dead for so long. And I should have seen this coming, but, you know, they're like, one, two, power down. And I'm like, oh my God. But of course, like, if I were writing this, it's like, of course, we're not going to be able to shock her. We've got power outages happening everywhere. So, duh. So,
I thought they had already been in a power outage, but then they had some, because it was so dark. But I think that was just for dramatic effect, you know, like on CSI when all the CSIs apparently just work in pitch black. That's the best
It's moody.
Environment.
Right.
Yes.
It makes all the cool lights on your computer look cool.
Yeah. So. Right.
So she's died and she's come back, and Coulson's awesome line, hey, you look just like yourself. You're looking like yourself again. And she's like, I'm cranky. And he's like, yeah, that's what I said. How do you think this is going to affect her as the season wears on? Do you think that her having died and come back to life, is that going to be a plot point, or is just May back now?
It feels the way she reacted, and then as they were talking to her, it feels like that it's just she's just back now. But I think at some point when they go find those ghost thingies that they're looking for, did we ever decide what those were called, or are we just calling them ghosts?
We're just calling them ghosts. The dead people from the lab.
Right. So when they finally find them again, maybe she might have some sort of connection to them, or maybe she can sense them or something like that. But I don't think it's going to have any lasting Tahiti-type effects on her, anything like that.
Okay. So bringing up Tahiti, thank you very much. We've had several people on the show die and come back to life. Coulson is the main one. Actually, he died before the show, but he's come back to life. Sky has died and come back to life, and even her transformation into an Inhuman, I think there's some level of being reborn right, that goes with that. And now May. So there's this, you know, this cycle of rebirth for the three main characters on the show. You might also argue that Fitz died because of the brain damage he suffered when he rescued Simmons.
I would not have to argue that at all. That's why he suffered the brain damage, right? Because he died and they had to kind of bring him back, didn't they?
I didn't go back and watch, and it based on my notes, it was that he was close to death, but that he hadn't actually died. But again,
I think that's definitely justified to say that.
So, life and death and rebirth is a common comic book trope. You could probably swing a cat and hit any number of superheroes or comic book characters that have died and come back to life. But this show does tend to take things a little less, I'm going to kind of use this term derogatorily, comic booky, right? So it's when characters die, they have been, for the most part, pretty serious about keeping them dead. You know, Trip, the Lucy Lawless character, Whitehall, Jia Ying, things like that. They've you know, done that, and it's only our main characters. And again, it's now May, and we're in the fourth season. So really, three characters over, you know, four seasons. I'm going to also say Ward, because Ward kind of did come back to life, but it wasn't really him.
Right.
So you got that going a little bit, but what's the do you think they have an overall goal with the fact that they kill off certain characters and bring them back to life and come back with this kind of this rebirth motif, or is that just something that they're doing to tell this particular story because it takes you in a place that you know, we're not they can't kill her, and then they do, but they don't. You know?
Yeah. I hate to say it, cause like you said, it sounds pretty derogatory, but it almost just is for convenience and to push the story along in a dramatic way. So I almost think it's more that than an overall theme.
They don't misuse it though, I guess is also what I'm trying to get to. It's not like every couple episodes they're bringing something back.
I don't think so. And I think we've had maybe as many come back as we have had die permanently or pretty close, but you know, it's just something that I think happens in this type of genre of storytelling because you can explain it. You know, I mean, if you would have had a more realistic kind of a drama, then it really doesn't make sense. But if you're doing a sci-fi or a fantasy or a comic book type movie, that works just fine. You can a character that people like, or you can bring back, and not only can you bring them back, but you can manage to generate a whole bunch of new good stories because they came back.
Right, and that can change stuff about them that now elicits different responses from other characters and things like
that. Right. So I think that's why, you know, sometimes these genres are so popular because they're so fantastical that you can get these exciting stories from them.
Do you think Ada's dead, having the power cell removed from her? Are there any ramifications with that?
Well, I wondered a little bit about that because when he took it out of her, because they kind of made a point of showing it glow as he locked her in there before Simmons got there. And then he had sort of deep thoughts as he was turning around and grabbing the thing. And he knew right then that he was going to be found out, you know, because as soon as he grabbed that, Simmons is going to wonder what it was, where it came from, how it works, all that.
Yep.
And, but I don't know. So I don't know if, that power cell will be able to be put back, or if he'll have to create a new, better one, which could change her a little bit, maybe solve some of those issues that she seems to be having with the delay or, causing people to become snappy cats or something. So, So I thought that was kind of interesting that, and maybe they just did it so he would be discovered. That was sort of what that particular, what do they call the
scene,
the plot device in the, in the movies?
The MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin. Yeah. Maybe that's what that MacGuffin was for.
Yeah. So we get to see Jeffrey Mace, the new director, kind of in action here. And
sorry, every time I hear the name Jeffrey, I think of Big Lebowski. So,
hey, man, you know, so like,
oh, Jeffrey,
you can call me director. You can call me his directorino, you know, whatever, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Okay, sorry, Jeffrey.
Jeffrey. See, I think of the Bill Cosby routine. So,
Oh, yep.
So, but he seems to be taking, you know, very good control. He's, as he says at the end, he's, you know, on TV, people know him. You know, I'm a straight shooter. He's obviously somebody that is potentially respected by the public, or at least people in charge, right? I mean, the other week we saw the senators or the congresspeople like, oh, they were all really excited to be there. And, oh, thanks for showing us this and everything. Can I get a picture? And so when it comes time to help May, you know, Simmons is like kind of freaking out. Also, I think because like Coulson's like hovering, it's like, I want to help. I'm going to be there. I need to help. And Simmons says, I've got a way to help her. And, you know, Mace is just like, whatever, just I trust you. Do what you have to do, which is he's very decisive, and he appears to be decisive in a good, you know, in an appropriately managerial way. Not like he's just making decisions and they end up being bad decisions, and because he's not a good leader, he does appear to be a good leader. I'd say he's almost doing a better job than Coulson was doing.
Yeah, I like the way they're playing this character because it surprises me every time. All both times that I've seen him. That's wonderful.
Right, but you think he's going to go the bad route or the route that you're going to go, oh, I don't like this guy, but it's not.
No, and then he turns around and does exactly what you really want him to do. He did not hesitate to send Simmons. He just said, yep, do it. Go save her. So I don't know. I'm kind of digging the guy.
Yeah, and then he's like, you know, Coulson's like, I need to go too. And it's like, nope, I have a mission, and it's you get Fitz and get Mac, and you guys are going to Miami, and you're going to take care of this problem with the watchdogs, which at that point happened to be the only U.S. location that was blacked out. London, I believe, was the first location, and then Miami, of course, Los Angeles after that. And then I was kind of surprised that the president could call in because they said part of Washington, D.C., so maybe it was not the part where the president was, or maybe he was elsewhere, you know, like at Camp David or something like that.
Oh, but sure.
That's because, I mean, you know, when he's in Washington, D.C., but who knows, maybe they did have emergency generators that would work without EMP. I don't know. Whatever. It's the military and the government's thing. But he says that Mace says of sending Coulson on this mission, he says, you know, it's the right call. It's what you would do if you were in my shoes. And he's really playing on Coulson's knowledge of the job and saying, come on, Phil, I know you want to go, but I really need you to do this. And you know that's the right thing to do, too. And, of course, Coulson can't argue with that.
Yeah, he can't.
And
Coulson seems to like the guy. You know, he doesn't always agree with him. But even in the end, by the end of the episode, he's saying no, he's not the one that needs to be doing that job.
Right.
Because what had May said, that should be you.
Right, exactly.
And he said, nope.
Which is cool. I'm glad Phil's back in the field. I mean, that's going to lead to a lot of cool, fun stuff, like we saw in this episode. But also, they do have some rapport. Like, they've known each other in some other fashion, right?
We it just does don't seem know like all that,
their,
doesn't it?
All their backstory and stuff. And Phil is a good counterpoint. Basically, he's the May to Jeffrey in the way that May is parallel to Coulson in when Coulson was in charge. Because, you know, Mace is like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And he's like, Coulson says, well, you know, I think we need to come out right now. He's like, really? Is that what we need to do? And it's like, that's your decision to make. But, you know, he's basically saying, that's, you know, that's my suggestion. And I think the unspoken line there is, you know, that's the right call to make, in the same way that Mace said that to Coulson earlier. So I really like the like just the way they're playing off each other in these episodes. And fingers crossed, man. I'm hoping it's not one of these things where he's the one that's leaking the information. Like he really wants to, you know, create like an inhuman, make inhuman anarchy or something like that. I hope he really is as forthright as he appears to be. Just
yeah. Oh yeah. I hope he's not.
Because I'm a little tired. I mean, it's a fine, I guess we'll say trope. You know, where you've got the good guy who gets to power and secretly he's the bad guy. But we've seen that a lot. We've seen it a lot in this show, and it's just there's enough anxiety about that kind of stuff in the real world right now that I don't really want that on the show. Maybe in a season or two, it'll be okay. But I'm just hoping they don't do that right now.
I agree that reflecting the real world is sometimes good and thoughtful and helps people learn from it. But it gets stale as well.
Yeah.
I don't want it to become stale. I like fresh. I like fresh shield.
And since we're talking about Coulson and his group, I just want to say I love the fact that the EMP goes off and Coulson realizes then at that moment that he cannot open his hand and it's stuck on the steering wheel. It's like
that was first world problems
right there.
It's funny because they didn't even have to put that on there. You know,
no.
I mean, they could have just kind of brushed over that. Nobody would have – it wouldn't have even occurred to anybody, you know. But
like,
I
could have been shielded, right? You know, you never know. They could have
shielded,
had a line
or,
that says it was shielded.
Or maybe his hand wasn't on the steering wheel at the time or something,
right.
You know. But yes, I love that they added that.
And if you watch the rest of that sequence until the power comes back on, they've pried it off. When he's talking to Fitz at the back of the car, his left hand is just gnarled. Like he's holding his hand in this gnarled position throughout the entire sequence. And then by the time they get to the hotel in Miami, he's folded it back into a fist and continues to use it to fight with. It's just, it's a great little running gag that they set up for it. I thought it was really cool. And I figured you could appreciate this as a teacher. Hurrah, rudimentary science saves the day.
Yeah. I actually cheered when I heard that. And yes, as a teacher, I that would be a good poster. Ooh, I got to make that as a poster. Just a picture of Fitz and him saying that. And then
Fitz
I'm
with
hang
a slide
that in my classroom.
Roll.
Yes, I got to hang that in my classroom. See, that's great.
But I mean, so all this technology and, you know, it's something as simple as remembering how to make a compass, you know. So that's why SHIELD is awesome. Because it's like it's all these real smart people that get together and they can do these amazing things, but at the end of the day, they, you know, their superpower is their brain and how they see the world and stuff like that. And in some cases it gets characters into trouble, kind of like Radcliffe has gotten himself into trouble here.
Yeah.
But, you know, Fitz does these amazing things, Simmons does these amazing things. So that's just really fun to see. All right. So the final part is we're back out in Los Angeles. Robbie Reyes and Quake are driving around before the lights go out or the power goes out there. They have a nice little tete-a-tete with some gang members, as you said, to save Robbie's brother Gabe. Which was pretty cool, and Daisy hurts her arm more. That was I felt that was a little graphic. That was a little more graphic than they would have been probably before. Or just, I mean, I know it was makeup on there and stuff, but
well, the more they show her and the more she uses her powers, you can tell how much pain she is, and that was this more than any other time that she's hurt herself. I really felt the pain.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really hurting, and as you know, Gabe is very intelligent as well, as he points out, you know, she's hurt herself. She's not going to the hospital, so he thinks something's up, and that, you know, factors into some other stuff that he's believing there. Gabe appears to be very protective, maybe too much so, of his brother. And Robbie says that Gabe does not know about his, quote, night job as ghostwriter. Do you think that's true, or do you think Gabe, as smart as he is, do you think he knows something else is up with Robbie?
Before she had that little talk with Daisy, I would have said that he didn't know, but I think he does. I think he does know and is I think maybe he thinks Daisy's going to make that worse or cause him to not be able to do what he needs to do, and that's why he sent her away. I'm not sure what he really thought she would have been bad for him by, you know, just being around him if he didn't know a little bit about what Robbie's going through.
See, I would say that he doesn't know about Robbie, and he thinks that Robbie's just a hardworking, you know, inner city guy that is, you know, having to really fight to survive, you know, literally. And knowing that she's an Inhuman and that there's these rumors of the Inhumans doing these bad things, Gabe probably has some sort of bias against them and thinks that that's going to mess up his brother from doing, you know, that he needs to stay focused, that, you know, he doesn't want his, quote, wheels to come off, as he mentioned and stuff like that. So, but I don't know if that's the case and Gabe is prejudiced against the Inhumans, finding out that his brother has powers, whether or not they're Inhuman powers or not, which Robbie has said they aren't, I think that could drive a wedge between the brothers. It also turns out that their uncle, Eli Morrow, who is their uncle in the comic books as well, is in jail for, I guess, beating up some guy who was, quote, the real criminal. Now, in the comic book, Uncle Eli was put to death and became the spirit of vengeance that, in fact, infected Robbie. In this iteration of Ghost Rider, it's more Robbie said he sold his soul to the devil, and Eli's not dead yet, but obviously has something to do with what's the science center that they were at last episode?
Oh, right, right, yes.
The energy company, because Eli was an electrical engineer, and you know, Robbie thinks that he needs to settle the score from his uncle, and that's how he's going to get rid of this. So his uncle is tied in some way to the characters in the photo and the ghosts that we've seen from the previous episodes.
I'm looking forward to finding out more about that. I'm hoping next week we learn a little bit more about that aspect of the storyline here.
As long as we keep the Ghost Rider around, we'll keep getting into this, I believe.
Yeah, we didn't get much Ghost Rider. We didn't get any Ghost Rider this week.
We got glowing eyes and that's it. And some powers that weren't, you know, just the smoking of somebody on the hood and stuff. But right. As Robbie says, it was all him.
So. Do you think she had made mention of this, but as the car is driving through this blackout area, was that really because it was an old car or was it because it was Ghost Rider's car?
That's a good point. I kind of took her at face value that it didn't have, you know, that it was an older car, so it wouldn't have any electronics in it because it's all mechanical.
Right. And would that really, I mean, yeah, I don't know enough about car engines and things like that to know if an EMP would take out the older cars or not, because they still had some electrical components,
right,
to them.
But they wouldn't have they shouldn't have microchips or anything like that.
Yeah, but the battery is electrical.
Right, but an EMP doesn't affect a battery. Basically, what the EMP does is it messes up circuits.
Okay,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a science person.
I would think it would affect a starter. You know, the lights for sure, God forbid the radio. I mean, geez, sure. What are you going to do then? But I don't know enough about old cars to know that. But if anybody else knows, hey, let us know if an EMP would take out an old car like that. But either way, I think it something had to do, you know, with him being Ghost Rider and that's his car. I think that's one of the reasons that he was able to drive it.
I'm not prescient or anything like that, but I believe your brother is writing an email to you right now.
Okay. All right. So cool. I'll check that out.
But of course, it totally could be because it's the Ghost Rider's car because, like, you know, I mean, we saw it flip in the air and burst into flames and that doesn't seem to do anything. It's very much like Christine in that case, you know?
So. Yeah. Every time I've tried that with my car, it did not pull through well. So
yeah. Finally, do you think Elena is still invited to Maria's wedding?
No, And I think she's okay with that.
Okay.
Man, but I just wanted to slap her.
Maria?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yes.
The friend. The friend.
The Maria. Bride. Yes. Yes. I was very upset with her. At first, I thought that was her sister, but it was just her friend, wasn't it?
Yeah, I guess it was just her friend. So, same person, right?
It was a nice touch, though, because it really showed you how much problems like this and attitudes like this and prejudices mm-hmm. can really affect people even that you wouldn't expect it to. And
right.
Yeah.
And they've been friends for, you know, what'd she say, like 10 years or something like that? I mean – you know, like if it would be like if, you know, you or I found out that the other one had some powers or something like that, then all of a sudden just like, oh, screw you. And, you know,
no, I'd be okay with it. I'd actually probably, you know,
oh, do it again. Do it again. That's what you'd be doing. That
right? I'd probably exploit you as much as I possibly could.
only if you get money. So, well, we got a little bit of feedback, over the 2 week break here. The big question I think that's on a lot of people's minds, Michael on Twitter asked ABC and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He said, will Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 3 be coming to DVD and Blu-ray soon? Crickets.
That is a great question.
Still don't see anything.
I'm so glad that you and I didn't wait to start recording our regular season episodes before we got the Blu-ray. Because
we would be a little backed up here.
Yes, so. We would. So I'm hoping it comes soon.
I'm thinking maybe in time for Christmas. So maybe after
give
Thanksgiving.
That big Thanksgiving push, right?
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, for what Black was it Black Friday?
Friday?
Yeah, yeah, or yeah. Cyber Monday, I guess, or something like that. So, and then Derek on Facebook told us, "Hey, season 4 is great so far. I'm delighted they finally stopped recycling Ward as a villain and moved on to something else." As much as we love Ward, I do agree with that. I think that it's fresh what they're doing now. He goes on that Ghost Rider is a great addition to the show, making every episode feel like a special crossover. We just need a great villain now. So, we may be getting that with this senator. There may be – maybe this person in the shadows is actually more of a threat than we think, the person that was on TV or, you know, or it could just be a henchman.
That's who I think. I think the senator is working for a higher power, because certainly a senator couldn't fund a global organization, you know, of the watchdogs mm-hmm. like that. They wouldn't have enough money probably. So I think she's just another pawn in whoever's in charge of this thing.
Man, I'm really excited now. I want to see what's going on. This is really cool. And it's great to have what's that actress's name again? It's Parminder Nagra on because I'm waiting for a scene where she and May talk to each other, because of course they were both on ER together. So that was pretty cool. And then a couple references I noticed. The gas station that Robbie fills up at happens to be a Roxxon station, which is the oil company from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it's been mentioned in Daredevil. It was in the Iron Man films, shown up a couple places like that. And then hoodlums. Where did I get that from? That's an old timey word. The gang members that go to attack Gabe call him Hot Wheels because he's in the wheelchair. Which is a euphemism that they use for the same character in the comic book based on this Ghost Rider. So I thought that was pretty cool. So they're definitely pulling a lot of things. I had gone back and read some more of the of this version of Ghost Rider. And like I said, I think in the next couple weeks we're going to be getting a new Ghost Rider series starting that's also about Robbie Reyes. So We'll keep you apprised of that. For now, though, I believe the Inhumans are telling us that that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
Oh, geez, they're always telling us what to do. But that's okay in this case. But we hope that you guys enjoyed this episode and all of our episodes. And, hey, if you do, we'd love to have some feedback from you on iTunes. So just pop on over there to iTunes, look for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, and leave us some comments. We would love to get lots of stars and some good comments so people are finding us and able to join in and listen in and tell us what you're thinking. If you want to just contact us directly, you can send us an email, shield@randomchatter.com. or, of course, on Twitter, at Agents Podcast. And you can visit our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Agents Podcast.
And you can also check out the other shows Josh and I host here on randomchatter.com, which include Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. All these shows are available in the iTunes Store, and you can find them on Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you guys enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us, spread the word, let them know about our Facebook page, go like that. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.